The following podcast is an exclusive presentation of Project Entertainment Network.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
The National University MFA program is a fully online creative writing program with no residency requirement.
Genre fiction friendly horror, sci-fi, fantasy, young adult.
Work with horror sci-fi faculty like Lee Thomas and John Coy.
Focus in fiction, creative nonfiction, poetry, or screenwriting. All screenwriting faculty, active Hollywood professionals.
Since 2005, the National University Online MFA program has helped working adults learn the craft of creative writing. Join the alumni network of over 1,000 graduates.
Get the idea in your head on the page. National University is an accredited, not-for-profit university. Explore more at www.nu.edu.
Thank you for coming to the Project Entertainment Network store. Please place your order. A good choice. A t-shirt for the horror show with Brian Keane. A Manta Method coffee mug. There's more. A Necrocast Icon hoodie. That's sharp. But why on earth would you want Bizong leggings? Wait, are you Mr. Frank? The Project Entertainment Network store, stacked with goodies from all your favorite podcasts. T-shirts, hoodies, mugs and more.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
Hi, this is Lucas Mangum and you're listening to the Necrocasticon.
Hi, this is Brian Keane. I'm an international best-selling award-winning horror novelist.
No comment!
I know where the bodies are buried, and now I'm telling you their location every week on The Horror Show.
Fire no comment, don't you understand?
We discuss the latest news in horror novels, movies, comics, and games, and interview the biggest names in the business.
This interview is over! No comment!
Thursday nights at 7 p.m. only on
Project Entertainment Network.
A nightmare.
Where's Scott? Where's Scott?
You mean it's not a nightmare?
Dan, where's Dan? Scott?
Where'd he go? I'm scared.
Scott, where are you, dude?
What do you want?
What was that?
Wait, who the fuck was that?
Oh, you gotta be fucking kidding.
I'm here, baby.
Skip my back.
I am here.
He's a Beetlejuice.
In person. You summoned me. I am here.
Oh, great.
They don't let anyone on this podcast now.
He's like Beetlejuice and Candyman. You say a certain thing and Skip appears.
Skip's Novak from You Gotta Be Kidding, our sister podcast over on Patreon there at Project Entertainment Network.
I'm here. I will fill in anytime, anywhere, and anything because I am that large.
That's what she said.
Title of my
So we got a huge show this week. Our special guest is author Lucas Mangum. He's going to come on and talk about his books and meddle with us. Yes. We're going to talk about the new Godzilla movie, but spoiler free. We're going to be spoiler free with this new Godzilla movie talk.
Why?
Because we are. Now, Walter, you saw The Perfectionist, right?
No, I don't think I did.
The movie on Netflix? No, you haven't seen it yet? Okay, I thought you did.
No.
Dan, did you watch it?
No, one of the scariest movies ever. No, I haven't got a chance to watch that yet.
Okay, all right. Anyway, we'll take that out then. All right. We've got this week's top 10 things trending in metal and horror as well. But before we get into all of that, at this point, I'm going to remind you can sponsor the Necrocasticon. All you got to do is go to projectentertainmentnetwork.com, click on the advertising link, and you can find out there. Also, Patreon as well. You can support us over there. That's where Skip and I have You Gotta Be Kidding. for as little, yep, for as little as a dollar a month, you can help support the server costs of the podcast and network and keep us on the air. Yeah, absolutely.
Please do.
Yeah.
We okay. want to be on the air.
So, I guess what we'll do right off the bat this week is go talk to Lucas Mangum. What do you think?
I think sure. He sounds like a cool dude.
It is time to bring in another one of the great authors out there on the horror scene. He writes splatterpunk and romance. Yes, splatterpunk and romance. His name is Lucas Mangum, and welcome to the show, Lucas.
Hello, how's it going? Thanks for having me.
Or should we call you Jamie St. John?
You guys did your research. That's awesome.
That's a pseudonym for his romance novels, everybody.
Yes. Yep, it's called All I Need. It drops tomorrow. Tomorrow being June 1st.
Yeah.
Like that one song, All I Need is a Little More Time.
Oh, Walter, somebody that's a kindred soul to you right there.
I can hear
you guys can do Paul Stanley impressions together all night long now.
Oh, no, how you feeling tonight?
We love you, Detroit.
I want to be out there with you. Toronto! You feel good!
One thing that I've noticed is kind of common, it's becoming common in horror fiction, especially in the independent scene that you and I are rooted in right now. Is there's a lot of musicians that are writing horror now. Matt Hayward, Josh Mallerman, Lucas Mangum.
We were talking to Lucas Mangum.
Yeah, yeah. I did. I used to sing in a band called Denizen. We recorded an album, but you know, never really did anything with it. We did play a few bars and for a little while.
So we're gonna give you the metal test right now, Walter.
Okay.
I bequeath to you to give him the metal test to see how
there's
metal
only really one
Lucas
question.
Is. All right, so give him some trivia questions to ask to test his metalness.
Uh-oh.
Okay. All right, well, first off, we're going to go Testament or Exodus.
Oh, geez.
That's the ultimate ice melter, the ultimate icebreaker for metal conversation and trivia. So, yes, Testament or Exodus.
So I really love the Testament album, or I like the song "Practice What You Preach." I think that's also the name of the album. It's been a while. Okay, but I also really like Exodus's cover of "Lowrider."
Say
the music.
Here's a great story about that album. I was in AIT for Chemical Weapons School for the U.S. Army when that album came out.
Oh, cool!
And I Fabulous Disaster. Just listen to that over and over and over again while I was in freaking training. And
wife has it on vinyl somewhere.
I wore that fucking cassette out, and I was always playing it against some asshole there in the barracks playing Milli Vanilli every morning.
Ugh. Oh, my God.
Well, see, here's my metal question for Lucas. Maiden or Dio?
Ooh. I saw them together.
What kind of comparison is that, you ass?
I saw them together with a Motorhead opening back in.
Then you got to go Motorhead. Three. Got to go Motorhead.
Yeah. So I mean, it was really hard. I mean, I enjoyed all three quite a bit.
Maiden or Priest?
Ooh.
That's the better comparison.
That is a better comparison.
I mean, I feel like it depends on the album. You know.
Right now, the albums are a bunch of.
I'm raising the difficulty level now because I don't screw around.
Okay. All right.
You know how they have the big four for thrash, obviously, sure. Metallica, Megadeth, Anthrax, and Slayer.
Fuck Metallica.
Who are the big four? Who are the bands? Who is considered the big four? And we've talked about this on the show a lot. You know, Tom should know these answers too by now as well. Who are the big four of the Swedish Gothenburg metal scene?
Oh.
Ooh.
That's not an exaggerated Monty Python Unlaid and Swallow question. There's a legit big four.
Okay. That might be a little outside of my range.
So we know where we can go with you. Okay.
Yeah.
By the way,
there's a chance I've heard them, you know?
Okay. In Flames, Soilwork, Dark Tranquility, and At the Gates.
Okay, I have actually heard all four of those.
There you go.
Yeah. I saw In Flames with Lacuna Coil back in like 2007 or 2008.
Wow. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So what's your stance on him?
On him?
Yeah.
I'll listen to them and not tell anybody that I listen to them.
I'll listen to them do cover songs all day long.
Wings of their cover of Wicked Game is fucking phenomenal.
It's like listening to Weezer for cover songs.
It makes you wish Typo Negative had done it.
What did you say? I'm sorry?
It makes you wish Typo Negative had done it.
Yeah, seriously.
I would have liked, you know, I would have liked to have heard Typo Negative cover Hymns Killing Loneliness. I think that would have been actually pretty good.
That actually would awesome. Sounds good, yeah.
Yeah.
You should write
Steel, the man who made doom metal pop music.
Yeah, pretty much.
Here we go again.
Yeah. Or as the rest of the world says, oh, they're death metal. But they're not.
Hold on. Let's see where his gauge is also. Favorite Paradise Lost record.
Yeah, that's I'm going to have to
way to stick him in the corner and poke him with a stick.
Okay, let's see how metal he is. He did the Testament Overkill, Testament Exodus one. So that's good.
That means he can talk and hang with us.
You're at the threshold. You qualify.
All right.
Did your
band ever
open up for anybody notable?
No, not really. But we played in a battle of the bands with some Philly band called Omega Lord, and I saw them open for Anthrax like a few years before that. So that was kind of weird.
Omega Lord sounds like an Anthrax song.
I know.
Well, Anthrax is one of my favorite thrash bands, so yeah,
they're good times.
Me too.
So, what came first, the romance or the horror?
Oh, definitely the horror. I mean, I've been a horror fan since I knew what horror was, pretty much. I mean, I saw a Stephen King movie, Silver Bullet, when I was like six, it just like changed everything for me.
What did you read that changed things for you, though?
I would say, being my age, I came up with Goosebumps and Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Fuck yes, dude. A podcast on that, the documentary for Scary Stories, the series.
I saw they have a documentary on Prime. I haven't watched it yet, but
you need to watch it.
It's worth it. It's very immersive. So if you're our generation, how old are you, man?
I'm 35.
Okay, so I'm 36. Like, you remember the Scholastic
you young pups.
Book Fair. Hey, fuck off.
Get off my podcast, you little sons of guns.
But you remember the Scholastic Book Fair when those metal totes showed up at your school? It was like gold.
Absolutely. That was how I discovered Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. Like, I saw, like, I walked into the auditorium, and like everything looked like, you know, pretty like, targeted towards my age group, which I guess at the time would have been like 8 or 9. And like right in the middle, like, but towards the back was like the rack that had all three of these Scary Stories books. And I was just like, what is this? This is horrifying.
What you're saying is you skipped right over the Encyclopedia Browns and went right to the horror.
Yeah, absolutely.
You're a fucking sociopath.
So I loved that when Scholastic would come, because we, back in my day, we had the, because I'm old enough and Skip's not old enough, we got like the Alan Dean Foster Alien Adaption at the school book fair and shit like that.
Oh, cool. Bill would come by, you get to take only one book. Only one!
It was freaking great. I loved it, man.
Yeah, when Scholastic came around, it was like...
Yeah, Scholastic was the gateway drug for fucking horror.
I think I had like 15, 20 of the R.L. Stine books, the Goosebump books.
So did you finally talk your parents into buying the Stephen King books, or did you just go out and buy them on your own?
My mom was a King fan, and she kind of, I guess played like gatekeeper to a degree. Like, she would be like,
she would let you read Cujo.
I didn't read Cujo until much later, but she would, like around when, like, I was 12, 13, she started like, sliding me these like books, and I was just like, all right, I'm into this, you know.
Here, read Salem's Lot. Here, read Harry.
those are instrumental books right there.
Yeah, so, yeah. Salem's Lot, Carrie, The Stand, and It, obviously. But then
The Eyes of the Dragon.
Yeah, Eyes of the Dragon was cool. The one that I that made me like, that really like dropped a, you know, bombshell on me was like, I had read, you know, some of the Dark Tower books, but then I read Insomnia and I was just like, oh wait, so this is all like connected, and like there's references to it, and it's set in Derry, and then there's references to the Dark Tower. Are all his books like a big thing? Like, and, like
it was the original, it was the original Marvel universe.
How many how many books of Kings did you read before you realized that it was one universe?
Oh gosh, I would say like maybe like five or six, like something like that. Like yeah, or maybe eight. I don't know. It was a long time ago.
Wow. See, my first book of Kings was like Carrie, and then I read Cujo, and then it was Christine, and I realized that they were all connected in some.
Oh wow!
Yeah, they started getting connected, and it just that's what made me love King, and then it really went downhill pretty much not soon after that.
Well, what's cool about King, and I guess what, you know, what also works for like, you know, like Brian Keene and some of the others, is that like it's all connected, but it's not you know, it's not required for you to like jump in at a certain point. Yeah
it's like an every book's a book, every book's an Easter egg basket.
How many Brian Keene books have you read?
I actually joke with him about this. I've read everything except his zombie ones.
Really?
Yeah.
He here's the joke with me and Keen. I picked up The Rising thinking it was a vampire book.
Oh wow.
Imagine my surprise. Boom, yeah. Fucking zombies. I hate zombies, but this book's so good.
Yeah, I know. I did eventually read The Rising, but it took me a while because, like, by the time I got into Keen, like, the zombies were already kind of everywhere, and I was just like, when I said I wanted more zombie stuff, I didn't mean this. Like,
I give it to B for making that culture true, because he was really the first loud voice bringing zombies back into the culture.
Oh, for sure.
So yeah, he very, very impressive in what he did and what he's still doing. I mean, he's
absolutely
extremely prolific.
So sadist.
Yeah.
Your Grindhouse Press book. Grindhouse Press had a close encounter with a fucking twister last week.
I heard about that. That is some shit, man.
Yeah.
And then today they opened up for submissions. Or no, they're opening up in July, but they announced it today. Yeah.
Because the tornado only came like 3 miles from their place.
So I'm assuming they didn't get any editors killed, because they're going to get flooded.
You know, it's amazing. There was no, you know, minimal loss of life or from the those tornadoes that landed in Ohio on Labor Day. Memorial Day, excuse me. But Grindhouse Press is very, you look at one of their books, you can tell they're a Grindhouse Press book, mostly because of the covers.
For sure.
And Saint Sadist continues that tradition. Did C.V. Hunt design that cover for you?
I guess the image is George Catronis. And she, like, I guess like a couple days after she accepted the manuscript from me, she was like, so I'm thinking this for the cover. And, you know, what do you think of the image? Because she said it was like in her head the whole time she was like reading the book. And I was like, I love it, you know. And then she, like, I guess like a couple hours later, just added the, you know, the title and my name. And she's like, what do you think? And I was like, great.
I mean, how much input do you really have as the author?
I mean, in this, you know, I've gotten pretty lucky along the way. You know, people have usually asked me what I wanted and most of the time delivered that. But in the case of Grindhouse, she just happened to pick something like right off the bat that I just really liked, you know.
And the book Saint Sadist, it covers a extremely controversial topic.
That's safe to say.
Yeah.
I think one of the reviews said something like trigger warnings galore.
And for our listeners, there's an incestuous relationship in this story. So if you want to avoid it, please avoid it. If you're okay, I highly recommend going out and picking it up.
Yeah.
So
thank you.
Splatterpunk.
Yeah, it's up there with the Spectre and Skip stuff. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
Yeah.
Well, I think Tommy and I both know those two, so we can honestly say that.
Yeah, and I aspire to be as good as them someday. So you're already freaking on the path, man. So good job. Absolutely, man. Gonna cool. tell you that right cool. now.
I appreciate that.
Yeah. Our pleasure. Nothing like kissing your guest's ass, you know?
No, it's, you know.
Especially when it's sincere, you know?
Yeah.
So if somebody's new to your fiction, what's, in your opinion, the best example to get them used to you?
So I would I usually steer people towards Engines of Ruin because it's my collection and it has kind of a little bit of everything. There's horror.
It's a short story collection.
Yeah. Yeah, short stories. There's horror. There's crime. There's a straight up murder mystery. There's some like I guess it would be called like dark fantasy or cosmic horror, and some of them have like a fucked up romantic element, I guess.
Well, I will say this: I'm on the record many times saying, if a writer can't write a good short story, you'll never be able to write a novel.
I agree.
And because it's so compact, you're dealing with maybe 10,000 words. And if you can get everything out there, the story told in three acts in a concise manner, it's brilliant. And it affords you the opportunity to open up into the long form of 90,000 words.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So How did you start? I mean, did you start writing short stories? Did you immediately try to jump into novels, novellas? What transpired with you?
So when I saw Silver Bullet as a young child, I started like making little chapbooks and with like really bad illustrations and you know, a few sentences here and there, and I would try to sell them to my neighbors, but when I got a little bit older and started taking myself a little more seriously, I guess I tried writing a novel, but I was like, it was kind of like stop and start, and like during my breaks, I would like kind of work on short stories here and there as well. So I guess I kind of like tried everything at once.
Okay, and now you played in The Metal Man, and. Uh-huh. Has that influenced you in any way in your writing, or do you listen to music while you write? And what type? Is it metal? Is it jazz? Is it pop? Is it classical?
Yeah. So one of my favorite styles to listen to is probably black metal, like while I'm writing, just because it's like, it's.
Where's Mr. Scott?
Know.
And we need Mr. Scott for this one.
Yeah, it's. yeah, it's Scott. You know, I mean. It's not really something I could, it's something that I really like listening to, but it's also, you know, not something that's going to like get me caught up, like singing a really hooky chorus, you know, while I'm trying to write.
So it's
really good for like zoning out.
So you're not going to listen to like Milli Vanilli while you're
yeah,
writing.
No, absolutely not. I'll just break in a song.
Yeah, our black metal enthusiast, our black metal historian, is not here tonight. Our other member of the show, you guys would have engaged in a very deep conversation with you about black metal.
Okay,
you know what's cool, so lovely cool. about Scott and black metal is now that he hates Lords of Chaos so much, we finally have an Eli Roth / David Goyer / Rob Zombie for Scott. All we have to do is bring up that movie, and he just flips awesome. Out, man. It's like a trigger word with him.
That's anyways. Anyways, my question is this: if you were to pick a band to provide the soundtrack to an adaptation of one of your books, which book and what band?
Oh wow! Ooh, that's actually kind of tough. I mean, I would you know, I would probably want, I mean, Saint Sadist is probably unfilmable, but I'll say it anyway. I would probably choose Saint Sadist, and I would probably want like, I don't know, like 97 era Marilyn Manson.
Well, that was like Angel with scabbed wings.
Exactly.
The best Manson ever.
Right.
There was a good Manson. Oh, I went there.
I mean, who wants to see a fat Manson? I'm just saying.
I don't know. When Manson dressed up as fucking Kenny Powers from Eastbound and Down, that was pretty fucking cool too.
That was metal. That was I'll give you cool. some. I'll give you some metal for that. Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah.
Oh. So why the romance?
You know, I just I got kind of stuck for a while. I got kind of I'd been doing, you know, one thing for so long, and I just wanted to try something different because I hadn't written in a while. Like I took like some time off for a variety of reasons, and when I got back into it, I was just like, okay, do I want to try to write Gods of the Dark Web again, or do I want to like try something like completely different as like kind of a palate cleanser? And I talked to my friend, her name's Tracy Wolf. She's written something like 55 romance novels published. I'm not even exaggerating.
Holy shit.
Yeah, like, she's just like, and we were just talking about it, and she was just like, you got any ideas? And I hit her with this idea, and she was like, you know, you should write that. I think that's really good, you know? I was like, okay, like, I'll give it a try. And yeah, I wrote it last fall.
So, you know, to piggyback off of Walter's asking, you know, pick a metal band to go with your horror movie. If you had a chance to take one of your romance novels or stories that you're working on and put power ballads to it, what power ballads would you throw in for your soundtrack? Like,
I mean, maybe as a fucked up joke, I would do a Community Property by Steel Panther. But
Firehouse, Love of a Lifetime.
Whitesnake.
Yeah, of course.
Do that during the bondage scene or something. Love of a Lifetime.
Or you know, like some winger, you know, like Heaven.
Kick out enough. I'm still on the ground.
Dan, it would have to be 17.
Oh yeah. My.
Oh god.
17.
That's because Maximum Overdrive's got a 17%, Rotten Tomatoes rating. That's why.
Sure. Yeah.
Just to bring that back up again.
You're never going to let me go.
Harry by Europe.
Oh, God.
I like Europe, all right?
No, hey, no. No, wait. Oh, Sherry by Steve Perry.
Okay.
Dude, that is the best. That is the best Journey album, by the way.
I agree.
It is. And Journey, and not a single member of Journey played on it.
Oh, it was basically Steve Perry's album. That's all it was.
Yeah. But it was the best Journey album.
Yes, it was.
You will drive. You want to piss off diehard Journey fans? Say that album is better than Frontiers or Escape. They get really upset.
Yeah. Oh, my God. You know, I'm a Steve Perry fan.
I don't know how recently he's talking about Journey on a heavy metal podcast. Oh, it skips
why not? It's part of the end. Part of the end more.
You invited me.
Yes.
You knew what you were getting into.
So, I don't know.
I got to ask the one question.
With romance. What happens when you mix the two of them together, do you think? What can you get out of that? Because if you get good at the other and you're good at one already, you could...
Yeah, you'd probably get my first book, Flesh and Fire. It's a paranormal romance, but the horror is like jacked up like to 11, you know. It's about a guy who's going through a midlife crisis and has to basically end up having to rescue his long lost love from hell. And so it's like this super like dark romantic like. Yeah, it was it came out a couple years ago as a flip book with a zombie novel from Jonathan Mayberry.
I love Jonathan.
And so that was
Mayberry.
Kind of fun.
Oh, so how'd you get on a book with Jonathan Mayberry? And did you have to wear a Hawaiian shirt when you wrote the story?
Tommy, you know that's not true because I was in a book with Jonathan Mayberry. So fuck you.
Now we, you know, I met him when I was still living in Philly, and we had talked a lot, and he really liked my, you know, I guess he liked my energy. You know, he just seemed to really, take a liking to me. Like I took a couple of his classes, and he asked me, you know, if I had anything, for that, you know, Journal Stone at the time. That was the book I had just finished, and I was like, so I sent it, you know, sent it in, and yeah, the rest is history, I guess. Yeah.
So what you're saying is you attribute your success to being able to communicate with an author who was willing to reach out and help out another person, an up and comer.
Yeah, it's all about paying it forward, I guess.
Yeah. That sounds brilliant.
And it's also all about being receptive to their knowledge and feedback. The way they present it to you and their feedback and learning from them.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, meeting the right people and not being a dick, I guess.
Yeah, that's the big thing. Don't be a dick.
Yeah.
You know, be accessible, be easy to get along with. And if you just can't and you don't want to, you know, if you know you're going to be a dick, just shut your fucking mouth and you're okay then too.
Oh, no. Yeah. When I'm having one of those days, like I'll just like where I'm just feeling mean or whatever, I'll just log off of social media. I'm like, I'm not even going to get on there because I know I'll just make that of myself.
Yeah. I've been those days where I've made that wrong political post. Well, I've seen them.
Yep. Well, I've seen them.
It's not that I was wrong. It's just other people thought I was.
Sure.
So Lucas, you have 10 books?
Six. Six books. Well, seven counting the romance. So,
okay,
yeah.
How many years?
I guess... oh gosh, three, you know, have been the steady releases. Yeah. But, I signed the contract for Flesh and Fire a little bit, like a couple years before it came out, but, you know, publishing can be sometimes, so it took a little while, right. It's like seven in 3 years. Yeah. About.
So extremely prolific writer. And you've been able to do most of this through social media, regular publishing, independent publishing. How?
Oh, man. It's not necessarily just finding the time. I feel like it's just making the time, you know. I mean, it's like whether it be like getting up before my toddler does or you know, staying up a little bit after he goes to sleep. You know, sometimes I'll have days where I'll just like keep my laptop open, like, and like have a document open. So like, even if I'm like doing things around the house, if something hits me, I can just like, okay, sit down and like write a couple sentences and then get back up and finish the dishes or whatever bullshit I'm doing, you know?
Okay.
And I've had a few, I've been lucky enough to have a few jobs where I can like, you know, write during my downtime. So that can be a good benefit as well.
Awesome. So what can we expect from you in the future besides the romance novel?
Yeah, of course. I'm working on a book right now called Cruel Summer, and I'm going to be doing it with Clash Books, and it's basically
it's about a Bananarama song.
Yeah, well, yeah, yes. And it's going to be a the goal is to make it like kind of a beach read for horror fans. Like it's a The idea, or at least the tone that I'm going for, is like if James Patterson hired Richard Layman to be his co-writer.
Richard Layman, you're going for Richard Layman. Oh.
So Richard Layman writes yeah, James exactly. Patterson.
I'm seriously, those are high goals.
Phew. Yeah, that's a Preston and Child book waiting to happen right there. Wow.
Yeah.
Preston and Child, I love them because they go, they do that weird in their detective books with Pendergast.
Yeah.
But they get pretty visceral with far the violence.
Out. Yeah, for sure.
You know? And it's hard to categorize those books. Are they horror? Are they hard sci-fi? Are they just fucking detective books? Are they fucking Scooby-Doo? Because sometimes
they
are.
I know, right?
and you know, Richard Layman is like the epitome of great writing.
Sure, sure. No, for like he writes in such a like just a, his style is just so tight. I think it's because he like brings this kind of noir quality to horror. Like, so it's not like this super like flowery like atmospheric stuff, which there's nothing wrong with, obviously. But like for his stuff, what I think what makes his stuff move forward so much, despite like, you know, sometimes the books are a little long, is the fact that he's got this really propulsive style.
Yeah, he does. And you're aiming for that?
Yeah, you know, I like to challenge myself.
I was going to say that is a, those are big shoes. I mean, extremely large shoes to fill.
Sure.
So, and if that's something that you're trying to do, I would love to look at what you've done.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, Lucas, thank you very much for joining us on the Necrocasticon. Where can people find you on the interwebs?
Oh, gosh. I've got my own website, lucasmangum.com. I'm on Twitter at @reallucasmangum because, you know, there's a lot of imitators out there, apparently. Not really, though. I'm just, you know.
Well, you have a funny last name.
That surname you've got, you wouldn't think there'd be that so prolific, but they're out there. I discovered it when I tried to find you on Skype, so.
Yes. And yeah, I mean, yeah, so mostly Twitter. I am on Facebook, but I don't use it that much. I mostly just use it for Messenger. So, you know, I don't, but I am on there if people, you know, look me up.
Right. Yeah. Better to avoid that drama.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Stay away from that shit.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Ian Lucas, for joining us.
Well, thanks you guys for having me. I really appreciate it.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Hi, I'm Iris, and before I give you what's trending this week in metal and horror, we here at the Necrocasticon would like to wave the flag high for our friends and relations in the LGBTQ community as June kicks off Pride Month. We can remember when the idea of a Pride Day was social suicide for some, so it's good to see how far we've come as a society. 10 is one, kind of. Rammstein's new album charts at number 1 in 14 countries. Germany, Belgium, Denmark, France, the Netherlands, Norway, Finland, Estonia, Portugal, Poland, Russia, Switzerland, Austria and Canada. Additionally, it debuted at number 9 on the Billboard 200. I'm just shocked Rammstein is still this popular. Good for them. 9 is the rumor mill. It says James Wan's Salem's Lot remake is destined to be the scariest vampire movie in long time. Haven't we heard that before? Like every time a new vampire movie comes out? 8 former Mono War guitarist Carl Logan is in jail. Now he's going to be somebody's bitch. Good riddance. You are not welcome in Valhalla. Unlucky 7 brings us the trailer for Rambo Last Blood. I thought he was dead. Rambo, not Stallone. Oh, well. 666, or should I say Candyman, Candyman, Candy. Nope, not gonna do it. It was revealed Jordan Peele's reboot will feature Tony Todd. This is great. Too bad the bees from the first one are all dead, otherwise we could bring them back, too. Number 5 comes to us in my dreams. Last week we told you Corey Taylor's knees had to be replaced. Well, now he's breaking the chains. Yes, Corey's burning like a flame after he blew out a nut singing Dokken. Part of Corey is alone, again. Not even Don Dokken can sing Dokken. 4 tells us Dee Snider has approved all Twisted Sister songs for all pro-choice uses and in the war against anti-abortion legislation. At 3, Disney has said Ridley Scott will be getting to complete his Prometheus trilogy. 2 is the first of our obits. Leo, the cat who played Zombie Church in the Pet Sematary remake, has passed away. And at 1, legendary Texas guitarist Rory Erickson has passed. For those not familiar with him, he wrote A Few of Ghosts, most recently covered by, well, Ghost. Doopy dooby doo. Here's Tom, Walsh, Dan and Skip to talk about all this. Damn, I wish Scott was here. I miss him already.
So, top 10 is a number one.
Our top 10 is a number one.
Number 10 is a number one. Rammstein's new album, guys, went to number one in 14 countries.
Yay.
Yeah.
I'm disappointed.
Here are the countries. Ready? Germany, Belgium, Denmark, France, the Netherlands, Norway, Finland, Estonia, Portugal, Poland, Russia, Switzerland, Austria, and Canada.
Hey. All the bands where we know they're popular. Yes.
My only problem is that Poland hold them as number one.
Well, guess where it hit in Billboard's 200?
300. What?
It broke top 10. Yeah.
Oh, shit.
You're kidding me.
No, I'm not.
People still like Rammstein.
Yeah. They do.
I'll have to listen to it because it didn't impress me.
Right, so earlier tonight we were talking about Salem's Lot with Lucas, and James Wan, as we know, is adapting Salem's Lot, and there is a rumor going around that it is destined to be the scariest vampire movie made in a long time. Now, Walter, this seems to be a running gag lately.
It's like the newest thing, the scariest movie of all time. I mean, back in the 70s, there was one movie that got dubbed with that label, and you didn't really see that that little dubbing until like many years later. I would.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And that was just, I mean,
it's thrown around. Like,
what do you remember after? What do you remember after Exorcist that got that that acclaim?
The Shining, maybe.
No, not The Shining.
Halloween?
Maybe. No, Halloween.
No. Nothing.
Yeah.
Blair Witch?
Which was 20 years later.
Yeah.
25 years later, actually.
That movie did nothing for me.
Doesn't matter if it did anything for you or not, Skip. It did something, you know.
Yeah.
So, we'll see what happens with the Salem's Lot. I hope it's a cross between the Tobe Hooper TV special and the actual book. I wouldn't mind Barlow being, you know, all shriveled up and
little creepy kid flying in the front window.
Yeah, yes.
That'd be great.
We need that. All right. Number eight, Carl Logan's in jail, guys.
What?
Yep.
Good. Bye.
Where he belongs. And he's changing his name to Carla because he's everybody's bitch now because he touched fucking kids.
Yep. He's gross. Yeah,
he did. He is not a good person, and he deserves it. However, I'm shocked that they actually put him in jail.
Yeah, well, he did. You know what I'm shocked? I'm shocked that fucking Stallone's still making Rambo movies.
You shut your fucking...
The last Rambo movie.
Yeah. Did somebody just say to shut my fucking whore mouth?
Yes, that was me. Shut your fucking whore mouth.
In the book, didn't he die?
Yes,
in the book?
He dies in the book.
Oh, here we go. Skip's enabling Tom.
There's only one Rambo first. At the end of First Blood, to me, Rambo dies.
Well, that's great.
I'm not enabling anyone. I'm just going by the legit storyline.
Yeah. Well.
Oh, no. Well, no. If you saw Tom on social media this morning, yeah, you just created a segue.
Okay. At 666, or should I say, Candyman?
Nope. Don't you do that shit.
Do it. Do it.
Don't you fucking do it.
Do it.
Say it again. Jordan Peele's reboot will feature Todd Ed Gump some capacity.
Hey, fuck
yay.
Yeah.
A cameo. Yeah. That'd be awesome. Right.
The top five is just blowing people away. Or at least nuts. Last week we reported that Corey Taylor's knees have to be replaced. That in itself is pretty fucking shitty. But apparently so is singing Dawkins songs. He pulled out one of his testicles. He literally ruptured a testicle.
Wait, hold on.
Singing the high note of a Dawkins song.
He blew out a testicle singing a Dawkins song.
The question I have is, why is he singing a Dawkins song?
Because we're the Dream Warriors.
Don't want your dreams, you're still the same. Your love is strong to me.
I've got flashbacks to Friday the 13th.
Breaking the chains around. I mean, come on. Corey Taylor should not even be trying to sing Don Dokken. Don Dokken can't even sing Don Dokken anymore.
I know. They gotta bring
he never took care of his vocal cords.
Yeah, what's he gonna try next? Jeff Tate?
Yeah,
My God.
Anyway, number four, Dee Snider. Wants to be
Prince Wade?
Dee Snider's coming to the side of Roe versus Wade and has approved all Twisted Sister songs to be used in any pro-choice advertising that they want or anything that goes against the heartbeat laws that are being passed in the down south.
Do we expect anything less from Dee Snider?
No, we don't. God bless him. I'm pro-life, but I commend you, Dee Snider. There we go. But that's my political plea. You know, that's just me. Disney has told Ridley Scott, finish your Prometheus trilogy.
Thank you, Jesus.
Number three.
How about we just get rid of the entire Prometheus trilogy, period? It sucks.
Again, some people like it, some people don't. It's not for us to judge unless it's Maximum Overdrive. Anyway.
Maximum Overdrive is awesome.
Number two, bad news. Two and one are bad news. Number two, Leo, the cat who played Zombie Church in Pet Sematary, has passed away.
Thoughts and prayers to Leo.
Yes, thoughts and prayers to Leo.
Look,
he's under the Rainbow Bridge.
I'm not a big fan of cats. I have a cat. I have two outdoor cats, one indoor cat. Cats can go fuck themselves. They don't give a shit about anybody but themselves.
Okay.
So Leo the cat.
He's not wrong.
He's not wrong.
They would eat you if they were big enough.
And,
exactly.
In my early fiction, I made sure that I killed at least one cat in every piece of fiction that I wrote.
So as far as I'm concerned, Leo the cat, good riddance, good rubbish.
My cat's a total asshole.
And mine is too. Mine pisses off.
Pliskin's a selfish prick. Pliskin's a selfish prick. He doesn't leave my wife alone. He's very possessive of my wife. And if my wife doesn't give me the attention that he wants, he goes off and, I don't know, pisses on the bed.
At this point, I want to remind our listeners that the views and opinions of those of us on the Necrocastic Company regarding cats are not necessarily the views that we will always broadcast to our listeners out there.
My question to you is, when you're in the act of performing...
Okay, come on, guys, listen. And the cat passed away.
Projects,
it's sad.
It stops everything. What do you do? And it's like, fuck the cat, I'm finishing.
Wait, hold on. Did you just say fuck the cat?
Well, not literally.
Throw the cat. No, he's talking about away. The cat coming in the room and staring at you when you're banging.
No, it's not just that. Cat will literally climb on top of the wife.
Well, dude, that's your problem then.
Then get rid of the cat so you can finish. Because the cat's looking at you like, why are you doing this? It's like, because I need...
Just meow back at the cat in a loud fashion and just keep railing, dude.
Fuck that. I'm showing alpha cat right there.
Can't believe we're telling a grown man how to deal with a cat.
Period.
Anyway, let's go on. Number one, sad news. Rory Erickson passed away. If you're not familiar with who Rory Erickson is, one of the greatest Irish hard rock guitar players of all time in blues players and jazz
right
guitar
there with
players.
Right there with Rory Gallagher.
Yep.
Up there, yeah.
Yep. Rory Gallagher did Halfpenny. Yep. But
Chin Kicker.
Erickson's song was
Two-Headed Dog.
Yes, You've Got Ghosts.
You Got Ghosts, yes. Yep.
But as a studio musician, he made his chops. As a studio musician, he covered everything. So, a huge loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely was.
He had a share of demons growing up, throughout the years, too. He did, he did battle some drug addiction and mental illness and such. But also, like, the lyrics was a very strong influence, very strong horror influence found in a lot of his lyrics and science fiction.
Yeah, absolutely. Wasn't he from, like, Texas or something like that, too?
He was from the South, yeah.
Yeah.
Austin, Texas. He was from Austin, Texas.
Yeah. Hell of a guy. Hell of a musician. Very influential to many people over throughout the years. So he will greatly be missed. Alrighty. So, Godzilla, guys.
You saw Godzilla.
I saw Godzilla.
And the 17 kaiju.
There's 17 kaiju in Godzilla. That's not spoiling anything. This is a spoiler-free review of Godzilla King of the Monsters. Okay. Okay. This movie pays homage. This is a new drinking game, Dan, this movie.
So what you're telling me is I somehow need to smuggle a 12-pack into the movie theater this weekend when I go see this. Do you want me to die?
Every time you find a monster movie homage in it, you have to drink.
Oh, motherfucker, I'm going to be
an dead. Entire beer. You literally
No, you just take a sip.
No.
By the 90 minutes is done, you'll have drinking at least a 12-pack.
Oh, fuck that, because I want him to drink an entire beer every time he sees...
No, you'd kill him.
No, he can handle 5 cases.
You know, I like how this has become a challenge to see just how drunk I can get to some of these movies. Fuck.
Now, the beautiful thing about it is if you play the Godzilla horror monster movie homage drinking game, you totally look over the fact that the story's a little thin. But who gives a fuck about a story when you get what you came for and paid for in this? And that is kaiju fucking monster fighting action.
Yeah.
It is constant and nonstop through this entire movie. They did good pacing in it. It's paced like a WWE event. A little bit of talking, bam. A little bit of talking, a little bit more talking, then bam.
So, okay, a couple questions come to mind, because clearly by the time this podcast is released, I will have seen it.
Right.
But at this point in time, a couple good questions for you. Okay, so the trailers and, obviously, Skip, revealed that there were 17 kaiju. Now, is this on top of the 4 main kaiju that we have seen? Like, is this 13 additional, or is this 17 plus the 4?
17. It's every kaiju that ever existed in the Godzilla universe.
Do they have the fucking lobster from Godzilla versus the Sea Monster in it?
No, but a giant crab does erupt out of a desert scene.
Oh, that's kind of weird.
It's badass, though.
The monsters that you really see are a Muto. A giant Muto, like the mother of all fucking Mutos.
Okay.
All right, a woolly mammoth with giant tusks, a giant spider thing, Monster Zero, Rodan, and Mothra, and Godzilla.
Rodan and Mothra are the primary targets.
You see a couple of sequences, like I said, where you get, you know, the crab, giant crab monster in the desert waking up, and a few of the other monsters waking when the call goes out to awake them. I'm not going to tell you what that is, but something happens that makes them wake up. And that's about it. There's footage of Kong, but it's all footage from Kong Skull Island.
But if you're expecting character development from humans, don't.
I actually disagree with you there, Skip. There is character development with the humans. There is a story there. It's a thin and shallow story, and it's only there it's like a video game story. You know, sometimes a video game story is just video game stories often have holes in the plots. this has got gaping holes that kaiju can fall through.
Yeah, but do we really care about a goddamn...
Because every Godzilla, I think this lends to it paying homage to the earlier movies, because the earlier movies had gaping plot holes in them too. So I think it carries that tradition on here, and I think they did it intentionally.
Really?
I really think they did. Yes.
Okay.
So that's why I don't use it as a fault of the film. I think it's actually a strength of the film.
Okay.
Now, do you think that, you know, because clearly the first Godzilla movie that kicked off this kaiju legendary universe got a lot of flack because there was only about, what, Walter, like 10 recorded minutes of Godzilla or Muto's fighting
They were pretty epic minutes, yeah, but that's about right, 10 to maybe 15 minutes.
Let me interject here because the actor who played Godzilla in those original films could only do like 4 or 5 minutes in the suit. And today we're doing everything digitally. So it really doesn't compare if you try to take the earlier Godzilla movies, the first, 20, 25 movies of Godzilla, where there's a man in a suit.
Yeah, still, that's
digital. So you can't compare that.
Well, you know, it's because it's established an aesthetic and a pattern and a pacing and a timing, a certain timing. You absolutely can compare it. And I think they do a good job of incorporating a bit of that chitziness into this story. And they do it well. I really do. I have to disagree with the people that are saying that the story's bad or too thin. You don't really need the story. It's just got to be there to connect the dots with the monsters fighting. And yes, there is character development in it. I really think there is. But I'm not going to say what that is now because that would be spoiling.
Yeah. All in all, a good-looking movie, though, in your opinion? Like,
they go places that I never thought they'd fucking go in this.
Oh, no shit.
Atlantis.
Wait, what did you just say?
They go to fucking Atlantis.
Atlantis. I'll say it out loud. I have no problem with that.
Yeah. That's all I'm going to say.
You sound like Ted Bundy telling people where the heads are.
Okay.
Brilliant.
Yes, but make sure you stay through the credits. There is scenes.
All right.
Yes.
So Tommy, in your opinion, seeing the new Godzilla movie is a thumbs up, thumbs out?
It's not so much a thumbs up. It's a thumbs up on the whole legendary universe now. This movie is their first Avengers movie.
Okay.
And I'm going to say this. I'm being bold. I'm gonna say that the legendary universe started with Jackson's Kong remake.
Okay.
I'm gonna place that as the first one. That's their Superman, Man of Steel. And then you've got Godzilla that came 10 years later.
That was good.
Yeah. Well, no, 6 years later. And then you've got Kong Skull Island, which added to it. And going on, you have now Godzilla, King of the Monsters, and next you're going to have King Kong versus Godzilla. So,
well, King Kong's going to lose, period.
We don't know.
We know.
No. It turns out that these Titans Godzilla have been here for a while. I love the mythology they put in here, and I think you guys are going to love it too. And that's that's the best thing about this. And that's really the story being told here. Too many people are focusing on the human characters in this. That's not the story being told here. The story that's being told here is the story of these monsters. And the stuff with Monarch and the mythology that you learn about in this is very, very intriguing. It really appeals to me. Much of it's similar to how I write my mythology for my fantasy world. But I don't have giant kaiju. I got something different.
So, Tommy.
And also see how they can possibly or may possibly be able to link this to the Pacific Rim world because of something that is revealed in this movie.
So, Tommy, what you're saying is that this is a reboot of an actual established franchise to come forward in modern history.
Well, no. I think this is everything that they were going to try to do with the Universal Monster, Dark Universe. I think they're doing it right. And I think Warner Brothers learned from the mistakes of their DCEU and applied that to the Godzilla. They're letting it grow organically, and they're doing a good job of it.
Well, the kaiju are a brilliant way to do that, but how do they focus that down into individual characters such as like Batman, Superman, well, Wonder Woman.
Eventually, looking at those old Godzilla movies, Godzilla became, I mean, I know this is going to sound weird, he became less of a force of nature, and he became more of a superhero in his own right. Like, you have to think, when I was a kid...
He's made that transition here.
Yeah, like, when I was a kid, the movie that made me, like, know Godzilla was the good guy was Godzilla versus Mechagodzilla, when you had the fucking space aliens coming down and building their own Godzilla to kill Godzilla so that they could take over. And, you know, you had the inclusion of King Caesar and a couple of the other kaijus. But then when Godzilla comes back, he baby faces like he's Hulk fucking Hogan and comes out of the ocean after getting crushed by earthquake. And it's just like, nah, bitch, we ain't playing that fucking game. And like when he was doing tag team shit with other fucking kaiju, you know, It's like he became a superhero.
You get quite a bit of that in Godzilla, King of the Monsters. This is the John Wick of fucking monster movies. It really is.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not. I really enjoyed this.
And look, I love Godzilla. Big fan of him. Or her. Because sometimes Godzilla's a male, sometimes Godzilla's female. All I want is a 90-minute, maybe 120-minute escape from reality where I can watch a monster go through and destroy everything that I feel is wrong or what is wrong and make things right. And what you're saying is this current film fulfills those.
Yes, absolutely needs. Does.
Okay.
Absolutely does. You will not be disappointed in this. This is a fun movie. Very fun movie. It's got old man Lannister from Game of Thrones in it too.
Really?
Yeah, and Eleven from
Stranger Things.
Stranger Things. Yep. So yeah. I loved it. Pretty good movie. Real good kickoff to the Labor Day. You know what it reminded me of? Independence Day.
That was a great movie.
Yep. Independence Day is a great movie. It's got its flaws, but it's still a great movie. Same here. Plenty. Godzilla, King of the Monsters. The fun of this movie overwhelms and supersedes the flaws of the film.
Okay. Excellent.
All righty. So next weekend is Scarecon New England, this coming weekend, and as this show is being aired, we have been nominated for Best Long Form and Best Podcast Overall for the first annual podcast Horror Podcasting Awards at Scarecon. I'm going to be taking the drive out to the location in Boston, outside of Boston, for it. So hopefully I'll see some of you guys there. And the award ceremony is on Sunday. So if anybody can make it, come give us some support. And if we win, we win. If we lose, we lose. There is no loser. Why? Because we got nominated. That's all that matters. That's the way I see it. So, Walter, could you imagine ever being on a podcast that got nominated for anything kind of award?
Nah, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. That was never something that we thought of when we put this thing together.
Never thought that there was never crossed my mind.
Yeah.
Podcast? Wait, a podcast gets an award?
Yeah. Whoever gets the best overall podcast too gets like $1,000 in equipment.
Please, people, vote for us. That's all I'm saying. We need equipment.
They've already determined the winner.
No more.
I have no clue who it is. So we'll
hack it.
All right. So next week we're going to reveal to you if we won or not. Also next week we're going to talk to Gabriel Reiter and Chris O'Brien from Bunkheads. It's streaming on Netflix Amazon Prime right now. Mm-hmm. We're not going to have a top 10 next week. Next week, Iris is going to go over this horror meme that went around on the interweb a couple weeks ago with us. And all of us are going to give our answers to that. It's a rather cool discussion. it'll feature myself, Mr. Scott, Smoking Walt, Sergeant Fury Dan, and Skip Novak.
That's me.
Yes. And if Steve Mesa goes to see any movies between now and then, maybe we'll pop in a review from him for that. So we'll also have the results of Scarecon's first annual Horror Podcasting Awards too on next week's show. So until then, this chapter of the Necrocasticon is closed.
The Necrocasticon is an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network. Written and produced by Thomas Clark, Scott Groveston, Walter Ball, and Dan Roberts. Music provided by Daniel Edenfield.
My Favorite Story, a podcast author anthology featuring short fiction from the hosts of the Project Entertainment Network shows Three Guys with Beards, Jim Moore, Jonathan Maybar, and Chris Golden,
Tom Clark from Necrocast, Igbon,
Brian Keene of The Horror's Hole, Chuck Buddha, and Armand Rosamilia of The Mando Method,
Mary San Giovanni of Cosmic Shenanigans,
Jay Wilburn from Matters of Faith,
John Urban Sick of Ink Stains,
Bill Zung's Mr. Frank,
available on Kindle and in paperback and through the Project Entertainment Network store.
www.projectentertainmentnetwork.com.
This has been an exclusive presentation of the Project Entertainment Network.